Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Home Business Radio with Richard Captain Henderson, publisher of Home Business Magazine, and Sherilyn Colleen, Managing Editor, helping you chart your way through the choppy waters of succeeding as a home-based entrepreneur. This is your how-to show to help you successfully join the tens of millions of people who operate home-based businesses. And now, here are your hosts, Richard Captain Henderson and Sherilyn Colleen.
Greetings and welcome to Home Business Radio. I'm Richard Captain Henderson, your skipper at Home Business Radio.
And I'm Sherilyn Colleen, your co-host.
Let's get our USS radio ship underway. Is the gig economy where you should plant your home-based business flag? The gig economy offers opportunities for the future. We explore the gig economy with industry expert Marion McGovern.
In this episode of Home Business Radio, we interview Marion McGovern, author of Thriving in the Gig Economy. Marion is the co-founder and former CEO of M Squared Consulting, one of the first gig economy talent intermediaries to thrive before the term gig was even coined.
So, Marion McGovern, say hello to our radio and podcast audiences.
Hey, Richard and Colleen. It is a delight to be here, and I look forward to our discussions.
We do, too.
Home Business Radio is recorded live in our studio audience here in Lakeville, Minnesota. With a tremendous career in the human capital space and with a virtual specialty in employment law, Marion McGovern taught in the prestigious School of Management at the University of San Francisco.
With 25 years of work in peer exchange groups, McGovern is a director at the Alliance of CEOs and sits on several private company and nonprofit boards while actively mentoring entrepreneurs.
Okay, all engines ahead standard. I may need to learn a little bit about the gig economy. First, Marion, let's define the gig economy. Is this like where you're in a band, you're trying to get a gig for your band, or you're a starving actor and you're trying to get an acting gig? Is this what we mean when we say gig economy?
You know, that is where the term started, actually, back in the 1920s with jazz musicians. And the idea was that, you know, you'd work a gig two nights in one club and maybe a week over there. So the term really refers to the idea of work that is of uncertain duration and maybe variable duration and for multiple clients or employers. So that's what a gig is, and the gig economy are not only those people who work that way independently for multiple employers, but also the companies that help empower that work, as well as the ecosystem that has sprung up to support that work in terms of apps and tools.
Huh. So I guess it's expanded a lot since the 20s when I'd imagine the personal computer and the internet and email has caused the boundaries for the gig economy to explode.
Yeah, and let's not forget in the 70s and 80s, there were all the corporate restructurings and kind of lots of layoffs where all of a sudden you had senior management folks who decided to go out on their own. You know, there was a reduction in force and they hung out their shingle and said, okay, I'll be a consultant in human resources or finance or marketing, and that sort of began the professional segment, if you will.
Yeah, I remember that back in the 90s with the layoffs and with changes and the consultants, you know, hanging out their shingle, and for the first time they were really actually able to work as productively as they would have sitting back in their cubicles back at the office with the computer and with email. So, you know, that was a growing part of the home-based revolution, and I probably set the foundation for a lot of what we're seeing in the gig economy today.
Absolutely. And I think the attention on it today is the technology changes, where part of the reason I started my company M Squared was because it was a very fragmented market. There was all this expertise out there, but there was no way to put it together and for people easily to find gigs and companies easily to find people. Well, now with these technology platforms, they're trying to bring marketplace efficiency to whole huge swaths of professions and disciplines.
Hmm.
And of course, the one that gets the most play is, you know, the driving services, Uber and Lyft.
Great. So the gig economy is growing to be one of the biggest single business sector in the home-based economy. What is the widespread impact of the trend of gig work, and how will it reshape businesses of all sizes?
You know, it's not just the home-based economy. It's the economy. 2016,
mm-hmm.
it was $1.3 trillion attributed to independent workers. So, you know, there are a lot of people out there, and it's going to change businesses in many ways, because not only are there 41 million independent workers in America, there's another 28 million that are sitting as employees and considering going independent on their own. So that's a whole issue for companies. Do we want to keep those employees, or do we need to figure out how to efficiently bring in these independent workers to supplement our own teams?
Would a lot of those work gig economy, would they be working as 1099 independent contractors, or sole proprietors? Do you have any ideas?
It is a gnarly issue around the whole independent contractor employee problem, and it remains. That is one of the opportunities for the government to fix what is an ambiguous employment law problem. So my answer is yes, a lot of people work on 1099s, but there's also a growing movement toward, in bigger companies, what is referred to as SOW-based work, SOW being statement of work, where somebody might be a long-term contractor, and maybe they're somebody's employee, maybe they're the company's employee, maybe there's a third-party employee. But what really determines whether somebody should be a 1099 or an employee is the nature of the work. And the nature of the worker as well. You know, is this somebody that has multiple clients? Do they have an investment in their business? Do they run it as a business versus they're constantly working for ABC company? That's what might look like an employment situation. I don't know if that answers your question.
That's a good point for people thinking about doing this, that whether you're 1099, which has its own issues, or what you were saying, SAL, S-A-L, S-A-L, that
S-O-W, S-O-W,
statement of work, S-O-W, that's a term on the kind of work. And I imagine you can step into some minefields there and get in some problems if you make, you know, the wrong classification when you really shouldn't be a 1099, because I know that you get that gets into tax law and withholding, and that can create all kinds of issues within itself.
And, you know, I as you mentioned, I mentor young CEOs, and I think there's a problem sometimes where, you know, a young company or young manager might bring in a seasoned person to help them out with something, and they realize that maybe that person would be really good managing people. Well, you know, managing people is something that makes you look like an employee. So there mm-hmm. are some minefields that somebody could get into inadvertently, just because of how expert some of the independent workers are. You know, they can handle a lot, so people might give them stuff that might make them look like an employee.
Oh, it gets them out of that independent contractor swim lane and actually more into an employee.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, before moving on to our next topic, I'd like to highlight this show's sponsor, physicaladdress.com. Get a prestigious virtual business address game, home address privacy, mail scanned and provided online, secure web access to postal mail, mail forwarded anywhere, mail accessible anywhere, anytime. For more information, call 844-888-6364 or visit physicaladdress.com or our radio show website for more information on sponsors. Okay, Marion, so I've learned that the gig economy has nothing to do with me trying to get a gig for my band. Marion,
band gigs are totally legitimate. Absolutely.
I can't play. I mean, they wouldn't want me with my band anyway. I'd mess it all up. What are the real top three misconceptions about the gig economy?
Well, I think there is this misconception. I live in San Francisco where, you know, Uber and Lyft are both headquartered, the drive-sharing services. And I think there's a misconception that it's all about driving platforms and lower-level work. And the truth of the matter is there are gigs of all sorts, and there are digital talent platforms of all sorts, everything from senior-level consultants to web designers to copywriters to makeup artists. I talked to a company the other day that's developing a platform for snowplow drivers. So there are all sorts of gigs out there, and they – again, the individuals doing it range from very, very highly skilled to all sorts of ranges, whether it's, you know, data scientists or plumbers and electricians. I mean,
so I imagine some of this, if you've got a really good skill, but a company can't afford to put somebody on full time and hire them to do that, that this would be a good candidate for gig work where you could, you know, job shop or farm this skill out to a variety of companies. And even that might even then tie into other, that might lead into other opportunities that you could get referred to.
Absolutely. In fact, there is a startup in out there in the cybersecurity space that's doing precisely that, because a lot of companies can't afford that full-time, very expensive cybersecurity research resource.
I just personally saw a little bit on the cyber world and how much that was that was just turning into a bow wave of opportunity when I was with the Navy. And bring, you know, where do you find the, I guess that's a classic example of what would work in the gig economy, because it's so new and you don't know where your talent is and you really don't know what the job is. And so that would be a good opportunity for somebody to bring their skills and turn it into a gig opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So every different economic sector, like the gig economy, has its own unique ways of doing business. Marianne, can you please touch on the hidden responsibilities and challenges of being an independent worker?
Well, you know, independent work is not for everyone. There is a, I'm not sure where they got the statistic, but it is that only 60% of people have the kind of the mettle, if you will, to go out on their own, because there it is, you are running a little, your own little business. And again, whether you're a consultant or a handyman, you're running your own business. You have to bill clients, pay clients, get new clients, and in many cases you are isolated. So when I talk to people who are thinking about it, there are three things they need to consider. One, do you really have a skill that somebody's going to buy? You know, nobody wants a mediocre expert. Two, how do you feel about that isolated dimension, the fact that, you know, maybe you're going to be working with clients and stuff, but when in those in-between times, you're sort of the one that's giving your own motivation. You're the one that has to pump yourself up of, yeah, let's make another phone call or whatever it is. And finally, there is the economic question. You know, have you figured out what you need to earn, and can you earn that independently? And have you factored in downtime and marketing time and other aspects into that calculation?
Have you ever, like, sat down with a client, just said, hey, I've talked to you, and I don't know if it's just a good idea to be a gig worker for your personality, say somebody that just is suited to, they need to go into an office and interact with people and be an employee. I mean, do you ever run across persons who just don't have the personality to make a good fit in as a gig worker?
You know, I think it's kind of like speculators. You know, speculators have to be good at what they do, or else they'd lose all their money. For when somebody goes out on their own and decides to do independent work, they, you know, if they can't find the work, and if they don't kind of do a good job, or if it doesn't suit them, they go back to regular employment. So it's a cycle, if you will. But an interesting side note about, does somebody not have the right sort of wiring for it, is I happen to sit on the board of a company that owns the Myers-Briggs psychometric tool, which is a communication tool about your psychometric skills. And they are actually doing research as we speak into what kind of psychological type profile do most gig workers have. Not as an exclusion thing, like not to say if you're this type you should go into it or that type you shouldn't, but more to say if you're this type, how do you, what's the best way for you personally to deal with that isolation factor?
Yeah, I think I took my Myers-Briggs and they said I was unemployable, so I became a magazine publisher.
It's not
but yeah,
unemployable,
that's
really it's good. A communication
tool.
The
big picture here is that, you know, you've got to, I guess, figure out, understand your personality and maybe most people could be a gig worker, but you got to understand where your weak points are.
Exactly. I think people need to, think about when they worked from home, for example, with their current employer. Did that feel good, or couldn't they wait to get back to the office? I mean, things like that.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny you mentioned that. Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead. What were you saying?
One thing people can do is their own little SWOT. SWOT is a strategic planning term: strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. But look at your strengths and weaknesses. If one of your strengths is being independent and independent thinking and kind of coming up with result, great, maybe it is the right thing for you.
Yeah, I guess sometimes you can adapt. Funny, I have a friend and he gravitated from a large corporate world to being a basically working from home, and he was going crazy thinking about it. And I ran into him about a month later and he had completely changed, where he said if suddenly the employer said it's time to come back to the office and leave your home office, he was going to quit. He said he had made the transition and loved working from home as pretty much a gig economy worker. So, it's something I guess you can adapt to. Yes. Moving on, you're setting your prices as a gig economy worker, as in any type of business, is always a big challenge. No matter how systematic you try to be, there's always risk in pricing. Marion, how do you determine your gig economy price based upon skills, expertise, and the nature of your work?
To me, the work is the most important aspect of it. So you could have, and there are factors that go into that. Now, you shouldn't just say, I earned $100,000, and therefore I'm going to divide by 2,000, which is the number of hours in a year, and that will be my hourly rate. That's really not the way to do it. You really need to understand what the value of is of that work. And there are some factors, if it has to be done really urgently, if somebody needs this yesterday, potentially you need to charge a little more because maybe you're going to be working nights and weekends to make that happen. If it's something that you have done all the time and could do in your sleep, maybe you charge a little less for that because it's not a problem. But if it's something that's totally new turf and you're going to have to come up with innovative, creative things, maybe you charge more. So figuring out first-timers how to charge, part of that is you could look to some of the digital talent platforms, see kind of what certain rates are, but that's not always very informative. You could go to former coworkers and say, hey, what would you be willing to pay for this kind of service if you were going to outsource that service? Some of the digital talent platforms actually offer pricing information. There's one called Thumbtack, which is for personal service workers like videographers, gardeners, plumbers, etc. And they will tell their participants that in your city, this is what someone is charging for that kind of service.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with reaching out to to who you would perceive as your audience, and getting their feedback on what they would pay. And another challenge I've seen, or kind of a problem, particularly with office professionals, is to understand that the cost of their labor is burdened, is marked up. And so if you look at what a company would say bill for somebody, And it's a lot more than the actual hourly rate that they're being paid. And sometimes I think, you know, a gig economy or a 1099 might actually undervalue themselves if they don't understand the burden rate and how much a corporation is marking up when they bill somebody to a client. Have you ever come across that as a challenge?
That's a good point, Richard. Absolutely. You know, another factor is that as an independent, you are paying more in taxes than you are as an employee because your employer is paying part of your FICA and Social Security. So you need to adjust for that too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so home-based workers face the biggest challenge with work isolation, as many in the gig economy work independently. Although everyone says they hate going into the office, most do at least appreciate the human interaction, so you're often on an island in the gig world. Marianne, how do you manage the isolation of working independently?
You know, I think you have to be engaged in the world. I kind of worry sometimes with all of the digital branding activities that people do. I think they think if they keep their Twitter feed going and, you know, keep posting on their blog and putting up Instagram things with their new designs, that kind of business will come. But, you know, people buy from people. So it's really important to create those personal network opportunities. So whether it's being part of a professional organization or an industry organization, you know, that something that helps your learning as well, because let's face it, this is a fast-paced world where you just have to keep learning and you have to keep updating your skills. So going to conferences, going to events, and creating that personal connection, I think that's very important, especially in the digital world.
Yeah, in the military, we had that term, if you're virtual, you're virtual. You have to get out there and, you know, an email and phone calls is great, but you've got to make that personal connection. I think it's not as difficult as people, if you're working independently, it can be, you know, something as simple as joining a local chamber of commerce or Rotary Club or going to professional networking events. But
you need
to keep engaged. You need to make that connection.
That's right, because you never know where your next gig might come from.
Well, we can expect a lot of changes coming in the gig world. Marian, what are the key factors that will change the future of the gig economy, including policy changes, legal developments, and forward-thinking entrepreneurs?
Well, you know, we touched on one, which was the whole 1099 employment issue. You know, if the government could make strides to make that clearer, you know, that would be good. And word is, in the Republican tax plan, the senator from South Dakota has put in some language to eliminate penalties for misclassification as long as there is a clear contract that the person's independent and that the person has clients, et cetera, et cetera. So that would, you know, if that makes it through, that would be a good thing. Senator Mark Warner is also working on a bill to look at portable benefits because, of course, that is one of the complaints about the gig economy is that people don't have access to their traditional employment-oriented benefits like medical insurance and pensions and things like that. So he has put forward a bill about putting money towards piloting some options to see how would it work, and then after a year of those options, creating a federal program. So, again, who knows if that will make it through Washington.
Yeah, that would be really helpful. That would be very helpful.
But in the meantime, there are people that are out there figuring out solutions, those entrepreneurs, as you said. There's, you know, one issue for independent workers is getting professional liability insurance. And that's, you know, whether you're a tradesperson or a consultant, you might need to have that liability insurance, and it's really hard to get as an individual. And there's a startup called Bunker Insurance. Bunker, like, you know, a military bunker or a golf bunker.
I understand that, Bunker.
Yeah, Bunker Insurance, where it is a platform for companies who want to get it for contractors and for contractors. And you can get it not just a blanket coverage, but you can get a policy that is just for an individual project. So, you know, why pay for an enormous insurance policy if the truth of the matter is you only need it for this one project that's going to last 3 months? So it's far more cost effective. There's also a company in Southern California that's looking at, you know, gig workers at the very low end of the totem pole in the restaurant industry, where, you know, restaurants, fast food restaurants, they're kind of notorious for not being able to give workers enough shifts that they can qualify for benefits. Well, this guy has combined with lots of restaurants, and you can work shifts at multiple restaurants so that you can get a 40-hour work week and you can get benefits. So, again, entrepreneurs aren't waiting for the government to figure out the problems.
Well, Marianne, this has been a great discussion on the gig economy, one that will help our listeners thrive in the home-based gig arena. Do you have any additional points to share with our audience today?
Just that it is a growing trend, and people need to jump in with both feet. And my recent book, Thriving the Gig Economy, has all sorts of tips for how people can structure their businesses to thrive in the new world.
Well, Mary McGovern, thank you for being such a great guest.
The gig economy is where you want to be, a place of opportunity in the home business world. Thank you, Marianne McGovern, for your advice and insights. For more information on these topics and her book, Thriving in the Gig Economy, visit the radio website at homebusinessmag.com.
Thanks for joining us in this session of Home Business Radio. Share your feedback with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and at our website, homebusinessmag.com.
Visit the website for information on advertising. Subscribe free to our newsletter. Please visit our sponsors. For more information, visit homebusinessmag.com or the Home Business Expo at homebusinessexpo.com.
I'm Richard Captain Henderson saying anchors away.
I'm Sherilyn Colleen. We'll talk with you soon. Until then,
make it a great home-based biz day.